Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. There we go. There we go. I say stuff and then the music starts. I love this podcast. Hey, everybody. It's Kai. It is, what is this? Oh, yes. It's Make Me Smart. Welcome back, everybody.
I'm Molly Wood. It is Tuesday, the first deep dive show of the year because none of us is as smart as all of us. I mean, come on. If not Tuesdays, then when? And this is exactly one of those days. This is a big one. We're talking about, I think, the only topic in some ways.
Yeah. It is about the big lie, if I could coin a phrase, right? The big story is the big lie. It's about the causes of the insurrection at the Capitol a week ago Wednesday, which, as we have talked about a couple of times on this podcast, the general background of that story is a disinformation story. So that's what we're going to do.
Absolutely, yes. I think you mean to say borrow a phrase, right, from Timothy Snyder, the man of the moment. Yes. I don't know if you, just as a side note, this guy is like everywhere. He's the author of On Tyranny, and he's just been tweeting nonstop about this big lie. As listeners of this podcast know, though, disinformation is a business story because a lot of people are making a lot of money off of disinformation, even up to and during the events of Wednesday, January 6th, when some fundraising emails were sent out during the storming of the Capitol. But we just want to talk about the layers of this disinformation ecosystem and how sophisticated, frankly, it really is.
I mean, they had merch, for crying out loud.
They had merch.
Anyway.
Yep.
We've gone back to a trusted source for us. Nina Jankowicz is a disinformation fellow at the nonpartisan Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. We had her on, I don't know, a couple of months ago anyway, maybe, I don't know, before Christmas. Nina, good to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me. Wish it were under better circumstances.
Well, yeah, so do we, but we are so glad you're taking the time. Would you do us a favor and just sort of sketch out the disinformation background to the events of 6 January?
Yeah, so to do that, you kind of have to go back to 2015, 2016, when the Pizzagate conspiracy theory first started bubbling up from the hellfire of the internet, I guess. Mm-hmm. That was the theory that gave birth to QAnon, basically, that said that in the basement of a DC pizzeria, a non-existent basement, I must add, that prominent Democrats were involved in a child sex trafficking ring. And as listeners probably remember, this inspired one man to go and attempt to shoot up that pizzeria and free the children from the non-existent basement. And this is really the bedrock of QAnon, which asserts that prominent Democrats are pedophiles and Satan worshipers, and that Donald Trump is going to save the world from them. And I think that's really important to understand that this has kind of proliferated over the past 5 years, and extremely, you know, gotten a lot of extreme, I don't know how to say it, but velocity during the pandemic while people are at home. And they've been kind of indoctrinated not only to that conspiracy theory, but to adjacent conspiracy theories, because QAnon's kind of like a giant lint ball, picks up everything in its path, sticks to you, and you can't get it off. And that picked up the voter fraud conspiracy theory. It picked up Joe Biden conspiracy theories relating to Ukraine and Hunter Biden and his laptop. Pretty much anything you can think of, 5G, anti-vax. And that's all been, to some degree, perpetuated by social media. And we can't leave our congressional representatives out of this either. They've kind of laundered these narratives in the halls of Congress, given legitimacy, rather than debunking and disavowing them.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's been this kind of perfect storm, right? Because these conspiracy theories could sort of only thrive in an atmosphere in which truth and trust in institutions itself was already under attack, right? Was already being quite deliberately undermined. I mean, I said to somebody recently, like, I think you actually have to look at the election of Donald Trump in some ways as a misinformation success.
100%.
And so these conspiracy theories came in to sort of fill the void, right? At a time when people were being told you can't believe anything else that you hear.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, there's this big misconception, which I think we've talked about before, that disinformation is just about cut and dry fakes. Now, obviously, QAnon especially is just fake and outlandish, but it also preys on people's real grievances, the fissures in our society, the lack of trust in institutions, et cetera, the atrophying local media environment. All of these things contribute to it. And I think, you know, we had such a hubris for a time that this was just stuff that was going to stay on the internet, on the fringes and the creepy basement of the internet, and we were going to be able to keep it there. And clearly, we didn't take this seriously enough for a very long time.
Can we put the toothpaste back in the tube? Or we're fighting a defensive battle now, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I think I'm generally optimistic, more optimistic than some people about this whole thing, but not this week, right? This feels pretty bad that this has amounted to violence when so many people were warning for so long that that's what was going to happen. You know, I was on Capitol Hill in October testifying before the House Intelligence Committee. No Republicans showed up to that hearing, citing security concerns, but they really didn't want to talk about misinformation and conspiracy theories, I think. And even some Democrats that were there challenged my assertion that disinformation is dismantling democracy. They were like, can you give evidence of you know, a time that this has actually happened? And I said, yes, actually, let's talk about, you know, the kidnapping plot against Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Yeah, yeah. It didn't succeed, thank God. But it was pretty chilling. We can talk about voter suppression efforts that have been fueled by misinformation. And then here we have, you know, last week, the starkest example yet of this process very nearly succeeding and certainly halting democracy for at least a couple of hours. I mean, our institutions have sprung back, but we still had, you know, over 100 Republicans voting to overturn the results of the election. So I don't think they are that resilient.
I mean, I guess that's the thing that I think maybe is still not getting through, that there are certainly, you know, that certainly this is a business ecosystem, that plenty of people became conspiracy influencers because it pays, it gets a lot of clicks, you can sell a lot of merch, right? But that this crowd at the Capitol, these, frankly, in some cases, these Republicans in Congress have to be seen as true believers.
Mm-hmm.
You think so? Or are they political opportunists?
Do you think we get that?
Yeah. I do you think they're true believers? Or to take the deeply cynical take, do you think Jim Jordan is just stoking political resentment for his own, to pick one example, right? Because there are 121 of them, stoking political resentment for his own political gain.
Right. And what I'm saying is, don't we need to really do the work of separating? Because I think we still haven't internalized that some people believe this so strongly that they stormed the Capitol. A lot of military veterans, like you said yesterday.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, the thing that troubles me is these new representatives like Lauren Boebert of Colorado, who said things like today is 1776 and tweeted the location of the speaker and the other members that they were sheltering on the House floor. I mean, that I don't know how you interpret that charitably, frankly. And I think there are some true believers among among those in Congress right now. I also think there are some opportunists, and I'm happy to see the House introducing some new rules in the Rules Committee against sharing manipulated media, deep fakes, and disinformation. It used to be just for the things that were paid for with congressional money. And now it's, you know, really imploring members to think a little bit more deeply about the information that they're sharing on the House floor, which I think is important. And I hope that they introduce similar rules in the Senate. But it's not enough.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, with the banning of Donald Trump from Twitter and the shutdown of some of the right-wing ecosystem online, it's nice that we're lopping off the head of this weed, but there's still roots, really strong, healthy roots growing underground that we've neglected to attend to for the past 4 to 5 years.
So, talk about that some more, right? Because the president has been kicked off Twitter. Many others are still on it. And Parler has been taken down and they're suing to get back on and all this stuff. But doesn't that just force these conversations and planning and all of recruiting and all of it farther underground and make it harder to find?
So deplatforming works to some extent, right? The great thing, the kind of ironic thing about platforms like Parler and Gab is that the user experience is awful. Like Gramps is not going to really enjoy his user experience on Parler, and he's probably just going to stay on Twitter, on Facebook, where he knows what's going on and he's, you know, more apt to understand how to use it. But I think the most extreme of those folks are going to continue to exist in those alternative spaces. And in those cases, there's certainly an echo chamber effect. And frankly, we're not paying as much attention to those spaces. There are researchers and journalists who are looking at it, but hopefully, you know, the events of last week are a wake up for law enforcement that they really need to be monitoring and taking seriously the threats that occur on those fringe spaces. But still, you know, even with the deplatforming of the president and some other prominent allies of his, we have people who are, again, laundering this information into the mainstream information ecosystem, whether that's on the floor of Congress or on news networks like Fox, OAN, and Newsmax.
So last time we had you on the podcast, you said, you know, the economic incentive for these social media platforms is too great to address this problem. We see, you know, these news networks continue to push these narratives. Fox is going to tilt even more heavily to the right. What kind of a split are we starting to see? Like, what do you make of how tech companies are responding in this moment versus, I guess, how they could have responded sooner?
Well, I think we have to recognize kind of the realism of the situation. I think tech companies understand that very shortly there's about to be a Democratic controlled Congress that is not going to treat them with kid gloves, particularly after this, and they don't want to be seen as complicit. They're attempting to kind of rewrite the narrative of their support, whether tacit or witting, of these networks over the past several years. And I think we shouldn't look at these choices that they've made and just laud them, right? Mm-hmm. I think they're very calculated. But it's going to have repercussions around the world. There are a lot of world leaders, you know, the Russian dissident Alexei Navalny posted a Twitter thread where he said that he thought that Trump's banning had amounted to censorship because Twitter had never banned Putin or Maduro or any other, you know, murderous world leaders. And I think that speaks to the challenge of moderating at scale, particularly in non-white, non-English speaking, non-Western environments. And the question remains, like, are the tech companies going to finally start to enforce their terms of service more equitably across the board outside of the environments in which they're comfortable in? But the scale problem is huge, and they're going to need to make huge, huge investments if they are serious about this. And it's not just going to be a piecemeal approach. And I hope they do that, because honestly, they are definitely going to be furthering division if it continues to be this kind of wacka troll approach of, you know, sometimes the president is breaking terms of service and we need to crack down on him. It needs to be more consistent if they aren't going to run into that, you know, free expression argument.
Right.
Well,
can I clarify my sort of badly put question?
Yeah.
I guess what I wonder is, what if tech platforms start treating this as disinformation, but our congressional representatives and big TV stations just treat it as like politics and conversation?
And sport, right? Yeah.
And sport.
Yeah, well, that's where regulation needs to come into play, I think. And the House rules changing is, you know, very bureaucratic, very boring, but something that matters for the conduct of members. So hopefully that will have an effect. And there are a lot of people talking about the fairness doctrine and whether we need to reintroduce something similar for broadcast media in this environment right now. You know, I'm not a media scholar. I won't deign to make an assertion about that. But I would say that there are a lot of other developed democracies who have robust freedoms of speech, and I would say in some cases protect it more than the United States does. And they have similar legislation in place. So in this charged environment, we have to think about the ways that information inspires people to act, the effect on public safety, public health, and on the functioning of our institutions.
So without wanting to give too much oxygen to the bogus and cynically offered argument that Twitter and deplatforming of the president and others is a violation of the First Amendment, because, oh, by the way, it's not. How do we balance this free speech thing with controlling seditious speech, all of which is in the service of this question? Now what do we do?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing I would really like to see the new Congress do is introduce some oversight and transparency legislation on the platforms. We need to understand what they're detecting, what they're moderating, what they're deciding to leave up, and what they're taking down. That can help law enforcement, but it can also inform the broader conversation about whether or not there is quote-unquote censorship happening. And I totally agree with you in this context. Definitely not censorship. And I think we need to institute some broader forms of appeal for people who feel that they've been erroneously censored on platforms. A lot of countries like Germany, for instance, that have laws on internet speech are introducing this type of appeal so that there is a process to go through and that your claim doesn't just go into a black hole. Or on the flip side of that, your report about some violent or threatening content doesn't go into a black hole, never to be seen again. It's all about introducing more human eyes on the process. And given the role that the internet plays in our society, I think it's only natural that there are some regulations on it, just like there are regulations on our highways and our car safety and airplanes, right? It's clearly shown this week that there is an effect on public safety based on what people are saying and consuming online. And I think it's going to be exigent that the Congress address that as soon as possible. And I hope they do it in a nuanced way without using the First Amendment as a shield from making tough decisions.
Nina Jankowicz, still hoping for nuance from Congress, a disinformation fellow at Wilson Center.
Still optimistic somehow.
Oh, ma'am, man. We like to overreact in this country. Author of the book How to Lose the Information War, which I think you could argue we just did. Russia, yeah. Fake News, and the Future of Conflict. Man. Nina, thanks so much.
Nina, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Man, oh, man.
I know I went to the dark place. Aw.
No, it's all good. And I'll tell you what, we could have gone all day with her. This is just, it's so ripe and it's so, there's just so much. You know?
There's so much. There's so much business. There's so much lying. There's so much, it's just like, it's everything. I will say, I'm going to post this on Twitter later because I said it on Marketplace Tech too. Like, what? We need to pay attention to the fact that our social media platforms can disappear people unilaterally when they decide it's politically expedient. Like, I think the thing I said on tech was, just because you might think it's working now doesn't mean this is the way it should work. Like, we didn't make any rules for social media companies. We let them make all the rules.
Right.
And then now they're changing the rules as they see fit because it is a good idea for society, but also for their businesses.
Right.
But that's not what we want to happen in the future either. Like, it's just...
But look, Mark Zuckerberg is the ruler of an empire of 2 billion people and who knows how many bajillions of dollars. And how are we gonna unring that bell, man?
Yep. I know.
Yeah.
And how are we going to unring that bell when we still have people who are saying, like, no, this isn't a problem.
Right.
This isn't a disinformation thing.
Maybe that's
I'm telling you
one.
The truth.
Yeah. Maybe that's step
number one. Yeah, like step number one is shared truth.
Yeah.
Because, wow.
Yep.
Okay. All right, good. We're getting there. You know what? Every little podcast helps. We're headed to a break. Send us your comments and your thoughts on today's show. You can do that by, of course, sending us an email at makemesmart@marketplace.org or even better, a voice memo. Be right back.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
All right, we're back. Time for the news fix. Love Nina. Just still thinking
Isn't
about how great?
Great
she is.
She's so good.
So great.
She's so good.
Thanks again to Sheridan Smith from our fundraising team, who was like, you should really have her
on
your show.
Did I know that and I had forgotten? Maybe. That's entirely possible.
I think we said it. I might have said it the first time she was on, but it still is. She, you know, Sheridan gets a shout out every time.
Oh, man. All right. So just I'm going to be super quick with my news item because, you know, we're drowning in news. I just want to point out that on his way to the helicopter to get to Air Force One to go to Alamo, Texas today for what will, I'm sure, be a very interesting speech. The President of the United States did not. This is from The Wall Street Journal today, but also many other news sources, denied any wrongdoing for the events of the 6th of January. So that's where we are. That's where we are. I mean, not like I expected him to say I was right. I'm sorry. And it was a bad idea. But
yeah, but wow.
It's kind of wild to see him say that.
That is the, right? Like, that is the continuation of like, no, this is the truth on the other side.
Right.
And it allows it to continue to be the truth.
Right. And it lets, and I'm going to pile on Jim Jordan again today. It lets people like Jim Jordan, the congressman from Ohio, who never wears a jacket in the halls of the Congress of the United States. Yes, pet peeve, sorry. Also doesn't knot his tie, but anyway. It lets him say things like 50 million Americans believe there was fraud in this election. And it's just, it's nonsense. It's not true. And the president saying, I didn't do anything bad on Tuesday, lets that continue.
Can I take a departure into framing for a second? Because you know how I'm obsessed with framing.
Yes, of course.
And the George Lakoff sense of the word, which is accepting the framing. I think... It shouldn't surprise me. This is going to be somewhat just about politics, but it's also about framing. Because it shouldn't surprise me that the Democrats screwed up a chance at messaging. I'm pretty sure George Lakoff told us that that's what they do over and over and over. And we have allowed already, I see in the news media, right, conversations about framing around unity, framing around punishment, framing around partisan divide, like, oh, you're just gonna increase the partisan divide if you do this. And I was thinking this morning on my hike up a hill to try to make myself, you know, when you like hike real fast or run real hard to try to make yourself feel better, that like, if unity is accountability, then accountability comes from responsibility, not punishment. And that like, a really good framing around unity would be, everyone involved in this needs to take responsibility for their actions and resign. As opposed to, I am going to, you know, start this big fight, and the fight is going to devolve into two sides no matter what. And in fact, if anything, it is going to give the president exactly what he wants, which is a fight and a chance to stake out his side, which is exactly what we saw.
Yep.
And if I, as a parent, was saying to my child, and it's really hard to parent right now, to be clear, when you are trying to teach children about right and wrong, and what you're having to explain to them is like, some people think this is right and other people think this is right, and then sometimes right just gets decided by politics.
Yeah.
But like, what I would tell my child is that that peace comes from taking responsibility for your actions and then doing the right thing. And that just would be a really powerful message that if I were in marketing, I'd be crafting.
Fair enough.
Just throwing that out there.
No, I agree with you.
Okay. My news item is that actually two attacks happened on Wednesday, January 6th, and both of them were fueled by disinformation. Because the other one was that lockdown in the Capitol building in a room full of 100 members of Congress, in which several Republicans laughingly refused to put on masks, is most likely going to be a super spreader event. And two Democratic congresswomen of color have now tested positive for COVID-19. There will be more. Pramila Jayapal from Washington tested positive after starting to have symptoms. She said that she was in that room just getting more and more furious because Republicans were refusing masks and saying things like, I don't want to get political here, when they were offered masks.
Yeah.
Like, sincerely, think of the attack on the Capitol as two separate attacks, both fueled by exactly the same disinformation. It is appalling. Jayapal put out a statement, including a call to levy, quote, serious fines on every single member who refuses to wear a mask in the Capitol, as well as a suggestion that any member who refuses should be immediately removed from the floor by the sergeant at arms. This is not a joke.
Yeah, I think the case can be made, actually, that both of those attacks are continuing, right? Because we're still worried about more attacks from actual armed people. And then the attacks, you know, the illness continues and it will spread. And because Jayapal and others got sick, then others will get sick. You know, it's the way this virus works.
There's going to be a lot more.
In charge of everything.
A lot more positive results coming out of that room. Positive in the
positive in the negative sense. Yes. All right.
So,
that's
it is an ongoing slow motion attack. Wah wah.
That is the news. All right. Mailbag is upon us.
Hello, Molly and Kai.
It's Brianna from Phoenix.
Ivan from Brooklyn, New York.
Long-time listener, first-time voicemailer.
I want to discuss a slightly different, but maybe related thing.
That guy's such a pick-me-up. I want to hang out with him. Hello! Right? That's
fun. Yeah, for sure.
First of all, a correction, because, see, this is what happens when you enjoy the internet too much. You get tricked. Several of you wrote in about the no-fly hashtag, no-fly list hashtag that I mentioned yesterday. There are a lot of these videos on social media. I was like, yeah, there's probably only two or three. Anyway, at least some of them may have been inaccurate, including the specific video that I talked about yesterday with the guy getting arrested and saying they're treating me like a black person. That appears to have actually been from 2018. An incident at Orlando International in which, yes, the quiet part was said out loud, but not as a result of the attack on the Capitol. So, as my son likes to call it, I got Facebooked.
Fair enough.
By the hashtag.
Fair enough.
Yep. Now to your voice memos. Leading us off today is Dylan from California.
I've been thinking about adapting the idea of Make Me Smart into a current event assignment where two students can create a short podcast and teach the class a Make Me Smart segment about domestic or foreign affairs and a Make Me Smile story. After the storming of the Capitol this last Wednesday, we just had discussions about current affairs, and it is clear that my students, many of whom are minorities, have very strong and passionate opinions about current events. I feel this would be the perfect opportunity to apply the concept of your podcast to our classroom. Thank you for all you do, and please let me know if you have any suggestions on how to turn this idea into an applicable classroom assignment.
Wow. That's cool.
Oh my God, I love that.
That's very cool.
I think that's genius. You know, and then you could have your students find an expert.
Yeah.
To make everybody smart. Right. Like either get a, like, you know, get them to call and get them to send in voice memos.
Right.
Like, go find a trusted expert. And then there's part, you know, yes, I might be like turning it into a journalism class a little bit, but it's really just crowdsourced knowledge.
Yeah.
I love it.
Cool.
If you are listening, speaking of crowdsourcing and have ideas for Dylan, let us know. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org. We'll share those them because.
I wasn't going to go there. I was going to say something else, which
none of us is as smart as all of us.
Well, all right. I was just going to say there have to be curriculum experts who listen to this podcast, and they could figure this out for us easier than you and I could.
I love that. I love that idea.
Elizabeth in Texas. She's a nurse practitioner, wanted to remind people to wear your mask, also to get vaccinated.
I'm sitting in a waiting room
having just received my COVID vaccine. You've never seen a group of professionals giddy over getting jabbed. Say hi.
Hi.
Wow.
She's very giddy. She's gotten her vaccine already.
I have not.
Oh, she's here to get it.
I'm here to get it. Very excited.
Seriously, there is an air of almost
celebration
right now.
There is light at the end of this tunnel.
You said that, I think, Kai, and while I think that there's definitely light, there may be a train between us and the end of the tunnel. It's going to be a long winter, I think.
It is.
But there's hope on the horizon.
Yeah, amen, right? I mean, I have some family members and close friends who are medical professionals who are getting the shot, and it became so much more tangible that there is an end to this thing in sight once people I knew started getting this vaccine. It's crazy.
Seriously.
Yeah, super cool.
That gasp you heard was me about to ugly cry at the light.
Oh, my goodness.
At the end of the tunnel, because it's true.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, look, this should not be a surprise to you by now.
Okay, it's not a surprise that you cry a lot. What always surprises me is what gets you going. That's what surprises me every single time. So, you know.
Happy stuff, sad stuff.
It is genuine. Huh. Okay. All right. We'll put that one down on the list of things that makes mommy get all... Molly? Mommy? Wow, that's weird. It makes Molly get all teary. That's a whole different podcast. I don't even know what that is.
Anyway, the answer to the Make Me Smart question, which is... What is something you thought you knew and you later found out you were wrong about?
Here comes Jeff from Texas.
Something I thought I knew, but have realized I was wrong about, that you'll probably only get one or two historic moments in your life. Technically, I was alive for the end of the Vietnam War. Then the Iran hostage crisis, first Gulf War, 9/11, second Gulf War, Barack Obama being elected, Trump being elected, and now this day of shame. Embarrassment, but maybe hope as well, that maybe, just maybe, our politicians will walk away from the extremists and find their base elsewhere. So, apparently, in one lifetime, you get a lot more moments of history than you ever thought you would. Thanks for always making us smart and smile.
That's awesome. Number one, history is cool, and number two, that's so interesting. I was just sitting here cataloging the historical events that I've been around for. That's crazy. That's wild.
Yeah.
Because when you list them, you're actually, like, oh, yeah, I was here for that one, and I was here for that one.
Yeah. I know. I was talking to a friend about that and just saying, like, we never, you know, we were not entitled to an expectation that we wouldn't have, like, massive earth-shaking events. And I was cataloging, like, my grandmother, who was born between the two world wars, but during the Depression, and was, like, making her clothes from her older siblings' clothes, you know?
Oh, wow.
And then, but then all of the things that she would have seen and that my mom saw, and it's like, yeah, I mean, we... Nobody here is ever guaranteed an event-free life.
Wow.
Let's just say. All right.
History's cool. History's cool. All right. It was a lot. And, you know, pause to think for a moment about the historical week and a half, 10 days that we are living through, because hopefully it never comes again. We're done for today. Tomorrow, of course, being Wednesday, is What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. The email address to which you may send those questions or things you want to know, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Voice memos are always better because you don't need more of me and Molly talking.
I feel like there could be a lot of questions. Perhaps we should set aside some extra time tomorrow.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ben Hethcote does video for us. Erica Phillips does our newsletters and our smart speaker skills.
Today's program was engineered by Drew Dastad, who I also heard reading ads on the reading underwriting on the Morning Report today, and I was like, he's so famous. Mixed by Garrett Lang, famous in his own right. Our theme music was composed by Ben Holliday and Daniel Ramirez. We have a star-studded production team, including senior producer Donna Tam. She's with us until Bridget Bonner returns from family leave, and the executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.